episode 54. Again, last week was not the fluke, last episode, because I think we're releasing these quite close together. So last episode was not a fluke. We are back. We are catching you up ahead of the fall premieres. We are going to do a couple of special episodes. And as always, joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And brand new co-host, Mai.
Hello.
If you want to get in touch with us or get involved in the conversation with us, let us know what you thought of all of the shows in the DC-verse. Hit us up on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, or you can drop us an email at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Soon we might have some other social channels set up as well, but we will see where we go with that. As we do, we'll throw them in there so that you can interact with us there as well. But I guess we'll just get straight into it. Our last episode, of course, was about Supergirl and The Flash. This episode, we're going to be talking about Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. So I'm going to hand over to Caitlin so that she can lead the conversation here.
As our resident DC girl. All right. So you guys may have noticed that our last episode was less than positive. This week,
the statement, right?
We tried.
I was trying to be politic about it, but this week we are going to be in gushing mode, I think, because Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow were definitely my two favorite shows of the year. And I think Danya and Mai both really enjoyed them as well. So let's start with Arrow. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was our amazing, wonderful, delightful villain, Prometheus, a.k.a. Adrian Chase, a.k.a. whatever his actual name was that nobody remembers or cares. So tell me your thoughts.
Honestly, I actually really liked Prometheus as a villain. I thought he was really interesting because, one, I wasn't necessarily expecting it to be Adrian Chase. Like, I figured that there was something slightly off about him, but I don't think I ever, like, I don't recall thinking that he was actually going to end up being Prometheus. So I actually really liked, it was a fairly successful, like, bait and switch by the Arrow team to kind of lead us, particularly if you followed the comics, knowing who Adrian Chase was, like, he's not Prometheus in the comics. So it was just really interesting that they kind of, like, led you to believe that he was going to be a completely different character, especially if you had that comics background. Like, they really used that against you and kind of turned it on its head. But also, I kind of really liked how he was very personally motivated and also was really threatening, because that whole finale setup for, like, next season with everything, like, that was a genius move for a villain, where it basically brought it around almost full circle to the first season. And it was just such a really nice touch, because obviously we concluded all of the flashbacks this season as well. So you had that prior, like, Oliver's time away when he was, like, on the island and doing everything, like, with the Russians and blah, blah, blah. So his, you know, when he disappeared, that's all wrapped up now. We know everything up until he came back. So as they were tying that up, they did a full circle, like a closed loop, to bring it almost parallel back with season one. And it played, like, all those parallels through. And it was just, like, for me, really, really cool how they used Prometheus as, like, the driving force for that. I think it, and just in general, like, he's very, very, very successful as a villain for me.
Agreed. I know that when we were starting out and we had the mid-season finale where they were, like, teasing that it was the kid of a guy who the Hood killed, like, in an off-screen encounter kind of thing. And at that time I was thinking, okay, there has to be more than this. That's stupid. Prometheus really needs to be somebody that we've met before. Like, this has to be a setup. But the more they played it out, the more I liked it. And that could very well just be the actor's performance, because he was excellent. I have no words for how wonderful that performance was, especially, well, one thing they did was, like, they did the reveal in the middle of an episode instead of waiting till the very end, which was surprising and took you off guard. And then as soon as you knew that he was Prometheus, like, everything he said and every, like, smile, like, took on a completely different meaning. And then he just switched that performance from, you know, friendly neighborhood DA to, like, evil, creepy, over-the-top villain. And it was so good. So I just found that performance just really hard to look away from. Like, I think my favorite moment was when it gets revealed that he's Prometheus and he's in protective custody, and then he realizes that the cops he's with know, and he kills them both. And one of them he kills with a pencil. Like, holy crap.
Shades of the Joker, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to see a magic trick?
Unreal. And then he's got blood splattered over his face, and he's driving past the cop cars the other way, you know, humming along to It's a Beautiful Morning.
Like, oh, man.
That was, like, my favorite thing they did the whole season. It was so good.
And so creepy. Like, a very well executed. Because something like that can maybe come off a little contrived and cheesy, even though it's quite violent. Like, sometimes if it doesn't land in the right way, if it's not sold in the right way, you just get a little eye-rolly and kind of like, oh, really? That, I don't know. And the music could have, like, the song could have, like, really set it off, like, with the tone. It's so hard to nail that in the right kind of tone of creepy. And it was just expertly done, because I got that immediately, being like chills of, oh my god, no way, this is, like, really creepy. But I remember being on board with you, like, when they were hyping it up, it's like, he's related to someone from, like, season one and blah 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 blah, and I was like, well, I really, really wanted it to be someone who was very closely linked, and we'd seen a lot in season one. And I agree with you in that I did like it the more that it went on, because it made a lot of sense, because there were a lot of parallels there, and it just tied it in really neatly to season one. But I'm still a little bit like, I don't feel they should have hyped it up as much as they did for, like, his connection to season one. I feel like if they just let it play out naturally without, like, having to try and bring in that hype, and they hadn't, like, put us on that track and kind of made everyone think it was different to what it was actually going to be, then I feel like I might have found it slightly more successful. I wish, like, sometimes they'd, like, rein it in a little bit. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I don't know. I think there was less hyping it and more just, like, them answering questions in interviews and then us hyping it more than anything.
I guess. Well, I mean, it's, media tends to hype things up quite, like, take it, ratchet up, like, however many levels and notches. It's, but
I mean, we were the ones going, oh my god, it's Tommy, right? Kind of thing. Like, that was on us, not on them.
Yeah, no, I know that. But, it was speculation. You can't help but speculate if someone's like, they have a significant connection to someone from season one. You're like, well, obviously it's going to lead people, when you say something along those lines, to start thinking about the people from season one it could feasibly be, who could have a vendetta, blah, 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 blah.
I didn't follow any speculation. Did people think it was Tommy?
We theorized that it could have been, mostly because they were saying that it was someone coming. It was either coming back from season one, or it was someone connected to someone in season one. So we were basically speculating about who would have had, like, the largest impact for that to make sense. But then it kind
of... I'm glad it wasn't.
I think there was some theory that, you know, maybe he got brought back by the Lazarus Pit before it got destroyed, and he was dead so long that he came back really twisted or something. Like, I don't know. I never really thought it was him, because the actor is busy on his own show, but, you know, that was going around. Which I'll be happy to read that fanfic later, but I'm I'm quite happy with how it turned out, because they did a really good job of making Chase a kind of dark mirror to Oliver. Like, that was kind of the whole point, was for him to reflect who Oliver used to be back in season one, and we're coming full circle, and this is supposed to be Oliver accepting who he was and moving forward. And I think the only way for him to do that was to kind of finally accept and embrace, you know, what the hood meant to him, which he kind of realizes, like, and I liked it, the whole thing when Prometheus captured and tortured him. So I think Prometheus slash Chase worked really well. And then I just, Josh Segarra was so good in that part. So good.
Agreed.
Mai, do you have feelings?
I do, actually. But I never knew about the comic side of Adrian Chase, because this is the one time I didn't Google it.
You didn't Google something?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
This is unusual, right? So for anyone who isn't aware, this is unusual for Mai, because when she has like an inkling of something, she's like full research mode and like all the way in, like 100%. She goes like 0 to 100 so fast. Don't you, Mai?
Yeah, I do. Because I gotta know stuff.
Everything.
So I didn't see it coming, you know, at all. So what's the deal with Chase in the comics?
He's vigilante.
Oh.
So when they introduced vigilante, everyone with familiarity with the comics, or, you know, I researched it because I was writing news articles about it, were like, well, that's obviously Chase, because they introduced vigilante. And then it was a red herring for everyone who's like, well, we know who Vigilante is, so who's Prometheus? Just kidding, Prometheus is Adrian Chase.
Well, I'm glad I didn't Google that.
Yeah, I actually am surprised that you didn't and hadn't heard anything about it, but I'm also kind of glad that that's the case, because it's really interesting that to hear the perspective of someone who just didn't have any of that background going into it, because both Caitlin and I, well, I've obviously got the comics background, and Caitlin, like she said, she was researching it. So it's always really interesting to get the perspective of someone who hasn't really gone looking and researching that information.
I usually do, so don't expect that to happen any more times. Well, yeah, no, I think the most fun part for me was Prometheus's MO, because the man is badass in the worst possible way, but so badass. I mean, his style is awesome. He's horrible, but I love seeing it, if that makes any sense.
It's a character that you love to hate.
Yeah, but also, you know, his weapons and his... If we need another bow and arrow, his was cool.
And he was just... I love that, you know, he was always so far ahead and was taunting Oliver about it. I'm 10 steps ahead and you don't even know what game we're playing. Like, he was so good.
Kill me in daylight, I dare you.
I love, like, once he flipped the switch from playing the role of Chase to, like, the actual person that he was and was, like, taunting him, like, in public. Just the way that he switched roles was just amazing.
He was definitely more of a dark than a Merlin for me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, super in control, but not annoying about it.
And he really pulls your attention when he's on screen. That's what I found with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. He was magnetic. It was so hard to like look away from him. Like every time, he was such a scene stealer. Like, you don't always, but not in a bad way. Like, you sometimes get scene stealers on a show that it happens at the detriment of the show because it overshadows everyone else. But I feel like in this instance, when you've got a villain particularly that's, like, this strong and kind of this interesting, it really just pushes the rest of the characters and the actors, I guess, as well, to be better.
He adds instead of pulling away.
Yeah, so it kind of upped the ante for, like, everyone. I feel like the performances that we got from a lot of people this season were just incredible by virtue of the fact that, like, the strength of the villain pulled the quality of the season up. Like, it really lifted it for me. So I was just impressed in general, because I know that we weren't particularly... we were pretty down on the previous season of Arrow. So you listen to older episodes, you know that both myself and Caitlin were maybe not the most optimistic coming into this season of Arrow. And it very much surprised me in the best possible way.
I was worried they wouldn't stick the landing, like, because it kept,
they sometimes do that, don't they? They'll start off really, really strong in Arrow seasons, and suddenly they'll hit a stumbling block, and it just, they roll all the way through to the finale.
Because, like, season 3 was not great, and then it felt like the first half of season 4, like, was correcting all the mistakes that season 3 made, and then you come back from mid-season, and it turns into the BS, like, grave stuff, and it did not work. So I was so nervous that the further we got into this season that it was just gonna, like, fall flat on its face, and it never did. Like, it kept up its momentum the whole way through, and I was just blown away, but I'm ching after the finale.
Someone had to say it.
Yeah, but it was... Arrow season 2 was still my favorite, but I put it up there with maybe equal with or slightly above season 1, because I enjoy season 1 more on rewatch now with some context of where they were going with it, but I think it's definitely up there among the better seasons. And Prometheus was, I think, the best villain besides Slade.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue with that at all. Also agree, I recently rewatched season 1 just out of interest, and season 2 actually, and a lot of the criticisms that I'd had previously about it, I felt like once we had more content, and especially the further we've gotten the season, a lot of it actually plays out a lot more interestingly, especially after this season as well. Going back and watching season 1 and knowing where it's going to end up in this season particularly, that was really, really interesting. So yeah, I agree with that as well. Season 1 in particular plays out a lot better once you have the context of the rest of the seasons. It comes across a little cheesy, over the top a little bit sometimes when you just watched it in isolation, but yeah, I don't know. I agree that, like, going back and having the context for it actually makes it a stronger season.
Yeah. So I'd say, you know, season 2 is just above and beyond. So good.
Which is so odd for shows, because you usually get the sophomore slump. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of season 2s for a lot of shows are just dire, because they, like, sometimes they're not always expecting to get picked up. Some shows will get picked up again for a second season, like, midway through their first, or if their ratings are, like, insane, and then they know by the time they're getting into the back half of the show that they need to start setting up for a season 2, they don't need to make sure that everything is neatly contained and blah, 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 blah. So sometimes going into the second season, it just hits a slump and it doesn't really, like, come back with the bang that you're expecting it to, especially if the first season is, like, pretty solid and really interesting. So it was just, it's an unusual thing to happen. Yeah, usually the second seasons of shows tend to, like, dip slightly. I don't always expect a second season to be good, but Arrow's, yeah, Arrow's is still one of my favorites.
Yeah. And I would put season 5 up there in that range. So to bring it back to season 5. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit about Prometheus. How about the way the way the flashbacks wrapped up with Oliver ending up killing Kovar on the island? What did we think of the end of the flashbacks?
I'm happy to see him go. I didn't care how they ended, really.
Honestly, this season's, I know we said it when we were still back and recording, this season's flashbacks were some of my favorites. And it's probably Anatoly. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's pretty much just Anatoly. And
he's wonderful. I was so sad when he and Oliver, like, parted on bad terms. I was like, no, you're Russian bros. Like, fix your relationship.
Oh, man. I'm not disappointed the flashbacks are over. I feel like sometimes trying to shoehorn the flashbacks in to match up with the current season and telling like these parallel stories of like how they work in the past versus how they work and how they're impacting the current storyline. Like, some seasons it's been moderately to somewhat successful. Some seasons it's dragged the show and taken time away from like development and interesting stories that could have been happening. But this season's were very, very, very successful for me. But as for how it ended, like I was pretty satisfied all around with the flashbacks for this season. I don't really have much in the way of bad things to say about them. Whereas I know I've been down on the flashbacks previously. It's so funny that the last lot of flashbacks, the concluding series of flashbacks, is probably their strongest and most successful lot of flashbacks.
I still think season twos were the best because they tied the most directly into what was happening each episode specifically, because you had the Sarah and Slade stuff, which directly tied into things that were happening in the present day. But I really did like, because they did, the ones in season five did a lot to inform what was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, Oliver fighting Ivan Drago is always amusing.
Yeah. Yes. Like, a lot of the fights in the flashbacks of season five were really, really good, I thought. But yeah, no, I enjoyed them, like, more than I was expecting to. I know I constantly keep sounding surprised at myself for being like, I really like the villain. I really like the flashbacks.
Yeah, it's all enjoyable. And now, like, there's literally no way to go back there at this point because the final seconds of the episode blew the island up. The past has literally been blown up. So the only way to move is forward.
Do you think you enjoyed the flashbacks this season because you didn't have that awful wig?
Oh, man.
I cannot get over that they made the wig Oliver wore in the pilot, like, an actual wig that he was using, and the beach hair was fake. Like, how did nobody figure this out when he came back to Starling City?
It still makes me go, oh my god, are you kidding me? But now it's like, it's in-universe canon that, like, it's just a terrible wig. But... which, considering everyone knew that it was a terrible wig, it kind of makes a lot of sense. But like you said, why did someone just not snatch that horrible thing off his head? Rip it straight off.
I mean, I guess he could have been like, all right, I'm going to go in the bathroom and shave and cut my own hair, and then just like took it off. But like, come
Apparently
on.
Not.
It's ridiculous, but it made me laugh. I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
All right, so flashbacks are over. We also, this season, we had the introduction of the team, and we got a lot of development with them, especially in the beginning of the season. But the big addition in the second half of the season was the new Black Canary, who turned out to be Dinah Drake. What did we think about her?
I'll let Mai go first this time, because I'm always going first and I feel like I'm talking over everyone.
Well, it's gonna be short and sweet because I'm kind of in love.
Moon eyes.
No,
we love
heart eyes. The biggest.
What do you love about her, Mai?
Where do I even begin? Well, first of all, I love that she's a metahuman, because that never gets old for me. Give me a superpower any day. I just She's amazing.
I was really impressed with her because obviously on the flip side of like them kind of pulling the rug out from under those of us who knew who Vigilante was in respect to Adrian Chase, like introducing Dinah and kind of like throwing that curveball at us was incredibly surprising. I loved her. I thought she was great. I love the idea of kind of, because obviously it's really difficult going back and forth with like the comics versus the show, because they changed up like some of the characters and the names and everything from the Black Canary mythos. Like it's the show's Black Canary is so very different from the Black Canary of the comics. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I know that for a lot of people, it's very difficult, especially people who feel very fondly of the Black Canary of the comics, and myself included. It's a very difficult thing to reconcile sometimes, as much as you might love the interpretations of the TV show. So, like, I just really, really, really liked her. Again, I like the idea that we've got a metahuman kind of around now fairly regularly, and it's not, I like the subtlety of it when they bring it into Arrow and it's kind of not overpowering, because obviously on Flash it's all about metahumans, but I like that it's sort of trickling into Arrow but it's not taking over. So I think that's a really interesting part of it as well. Also the fact that it gets to introduce the Black Canary kind of a little bit more as like as we know her from the comics, which is with powers. So yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm not still mad about Laurel, because I'm always gonna be mad about
forever.
Yeah,
angry.
and I'm not even saying I'm not enjoying Black Siren, because she's also incredibly fun to watch, even if she's not a good guy, which I would like to have her on the good team, because that would mean that she would be around more often. But having the Black Canary back permanently would be awesome.
Yeah, I was not thrilled at first about bringing it. Like, I was fine bringing in another character, like adding it to the team, but like, just like this random chick that it seemed like they made up for the show, I was not thrilled about. And then they revealed that she's actually Dinah Drake, who is the first Black Canary in the comics. I was like, oh, okay. So they are respecting, you know, the tradition in some way. That one reveal sort of changed my opinion. But the character itself, I actually thought she was kind of underused through the back half of the season. Like, she didn't really have, after they recruited her, she didn't really have a plot for her own. Like, she had a little B plot at one point where she was getting an apartment, but other than that, like, she was really just kind of there working. She got her job at SDPD and was just kind of helping out. So on the one hand, it helped us not be like them being like, we're just pushing her so hard because she's the new Laurel, so that was good. But at the same time, I was like, you brought in this new character to be the new Black Canary, and then you're just not doing anything with her. So I wish they'd used her at least a little bit more. But I did like that they really had her being respectful of Laurel. Like, she didn't want to take on the name or her costume, basically, out of respect for Laurel and her memory. So I was really appreciative of how seriously they were taking Laurel's memory. Like, I'll always be mad that they killed her, but I feel like they have done a pretty decent job of having the living characters honor her and memorialize her. That statue was hideous, but the idea there was good. I feel like in sentiment, they've done a good job of having the characters honor and remember her, basically. And I feel like they've done a good job of that with Dinah so far.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm really hoping that this means that she'll get a bit more focus next season. I'm really hoping, because I would love to see more of her, see her step up to the plate, get a little bit more time with her. I don't know what
she's getting
way
a costume.
Yes, she is getting a costume, but also very I don't know what way that they're gonna take that storyline, because
I hope it's more bird-like for some reason. I don't want it to be exactly like the last one. I want them to be different canaries.
It'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with it. My one concern that I don't think should be a concern, but obviously knowing Dinah's role in the comics as the original Black Canary. Yeah, I'm wondering if they will try and go in that direction.
No.
Oh, please.
I'm hoping not.
They had an entire Alicity focused episode, like 3 episodes before the finale. Like,
yes,
they're going to get them back together.
Yeah. But the thing that they do with Alicity that drives me completely nuts is exactly the same thing that drove me nuts with Friends, when Friends was still on the air. It's the Ross and Rachel effect. They've broken up, they're back together, they've broken up, they're going to get married, they're not married, they're going to have a kid.
That is the worst relationship, so...
I mean,
Not exactly.
Her and Felicity have only broken up once. Like, it's not like they've done it 6
times.
They
were on a break.
No. Oh, God. I hate Ross and Rachel as well, so maybe not the best example, but it's like the effect of, like, the will they, won't they kind of thing.
There's a way to make drama without breaking them up all the time.
Yeah. So it's a very, very mild back of my head concern that they might do something like that with her just because of the comics legacy. Even though they started trying that with Laurel and it never really worked out, but it's there in the back of my head as like a, please don't do it.
It's not going to happen, Danya. I can guarantee it's not going to happen.
Okay.
Like, they haven't shown any semblance of romantic tension between the two of them. I think they've really done a careful job of establishing them as co-workers.
Yeah. That's why I'm hopeful. But it's that niggling kind of background fear.
He doesn't have every canary.
If he dates any of them, it's going to be Black Siren. Let's get real. There's my transition.
That would
so,
be so good.
So Black Siren is back, and she's going to be a series regular next season. Because the writers have clearly realized they messed up by killing Laurel, so they're...
Duh.
They're bringing Katie Cassidy back in any capacity they can. So Prometheus basically breaks her out of Star Labs because they have the worst security. Hmm. It's whether it's between Star Labs and the Arrow Cave, like... Then again, it makes sense because Cisco probably created the security for the Arrow Cave. So they're both incompetent with security. But Prometheus broke out Black Siren and she was working for him. Though we were seeing some hints of humanity with her, mostly when it came to, what's his face? Quentin. I was thinking of the actor's name. And I was like, wait, what's the character's name? It's like Paul Blackthorne. Wait, what's the character's name? Quentin. Like, we get the hint. We know that on Earth 2 that it was Oliver who died on the Queen's Gambit and Robert Queen became the vigilante. So that's different. So, and she says at one point that it's hard for her to look at the face of the man that she loved and died several years ago. But we saw the most humanity with her, I think, the way she was interacting with Quentin. And obviously this was super hard for Quentin to see Laurel's face on a villain. But Black Siren is back. Is she going to get a redemption arc or is she going to stay a villain?
I want both.
You can't have both.
I can have both. I can have first villain story and then slow redemption, but not next season.
I don't know that they... It's tough because they... It's very, very obvious that they want to bring her back in because they're missing that dynamic. They're missing that usage of Laurel, and they really want her involved in some capacity again. Very obvious that they regret killing her off, but I don't know that they'll go down the redemption route, but I don't see how they can keep her long term if she's just like a constant villain, because that isn't really how Arrow plays it. Their villains tend to, unless it's Malcolm. But then I don't want her to turn into like a Malcolm-esque.
Oh my god, I didn't even mention they actually killed Malcolm. John Barrowman said he's not coming back. They killed Malcolm. Guys, they did it. I just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, it took them long enough. really, it took them long enough. And right at the point where they figured out what to do with him.
They made him enjoyable on Legends, and then they killed him on Arrow. I was like, praise, they did it. They finally did it.
Yeah. But with Black Siren, I don't know what I want them to do with her. I'm kind of, I'll trust in the direction that they take her, villain or redemption, mostly because I'm just glad to see Katie Cassidy around, but I genuinely don't know what they're going to do with her. Genuinely don't. And I don't know if I'd prefer her villain or redeemed.
I feel like the way that they've been hinting at her loss of her father on her Earth as a way to introduce some humanity, I feel like inevitably it's going to be a redemption story. And I think it's going to have a lot to do with Quentin, because that's definitely where they were showing like her struggling around him. And I also just really need her to meet Sarah, because we don't even know if like Sarah exists on Earth too. So that would be interesting.
And their mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would like to see some more stuff for Quentin. Like, I really do like him as a character a lot, but...
Can you imagine a Siren-Canary duo, though? That would be so cool.
They did have a confrontation in the finale where they, like, knocked each other over.
Fighting together, making out.
I would not be opposed to that either.
No, actually, no. Probably not either. That's, yeah.
Now that's the fanfic I want to read. Any takers? Mm-hmm.
Throw it out there. Guys, who's writing that for us?
But yes, yeah, so we will see what happens with Black Siren. One other thing I wanted to bring up with this season was Felicity had this plot line with Helix. It took her a little bit down a darker path after her boyfriend died because Oliver killed him. Which, to their credit, they did not have Felicity blame Oliver for. I was fully expecting that unnecessary drama, and they never went that way, which was just another piece of evidence that they have learned some lessons over the course of the last few seasons.
It's taken them a while, but they're getting there.
Yeah. Like, she understood that it wasn't his fault, it wasn't intentional, it was Prometheus's fault, so.
You know, actually laying blame where there is blame.
It would have been very easy for her to be mad at him for like two episodes and then move past it. But they didn't go there. Goodness. But what did we think of Helix, and are they going to come back?
I don't think we're done with them. I really genuinely don't think we're done with them. It was left in a way that allows for them to come back. It's fairly open-ended for a return, so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them back, which could complicate things a little bit. But actually, I like this idea of Felicity's frustration in some ways pushing her to go back to that way of life. It was really interesting because I like this idea that while Felicity is a very, to an extent, a morally good character, there are certain things that she will do in order to get those results that maybe in the stricter sense aren't legal, but they're not. It's like that morally gray area. It just gives her this this layer of interest. Yeah, it's like the for the greater good, for the greater good. Greater. If anyone wants.
Thank you, Grindelwald.
I just like to see her hack stuff.
Yeah,
that's so fun.
I mean, let's never forget that her father's a villain. So
yeah, more of that. Lean into the dark side.
I'm not sure that I want her to lean into the dark side. I like this idea that though she may use morally gray means, the actual intention is for good. So I like that idea that she's going a route that could very well be her villain origin story, but it's not. I like that idea of choice and balance through the means that you use to get the justice you seek. Like, I love that idea because it's morally complex and very, very interesting. And if they keep playing at that, I think, particularly in Felicity's character, because she's got that really cool kind of could go either way vibe, it's really interesting to always see her choosing to be good.
Well said, Dumbledore.
Please don't.
It is our choices, Harry.
Don't compare to Dumbledore. No. I have got probably a couple of hours long rant in me for why I don't like Dumbledore. So it's not...
It is our choices, for this podcast.
Yeah, that is not for this podcast. My Dumbledore rant is not for this podcast. Let's move along.
All right, so any final thoughts about Arrow season 5? I have one. I was not expecting to like Renee as much as I did by the end of the season, because he started out as kind of obnoxious, and then they gave him a little backstory and the whole plot with him trying to get his daughter back, and yes, I really like him by the end of the season.
I actually really like that sort of side, like that B story with him. Like, I felt that was very successful.
And him and Quentin.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really like this fatherly kind of what you do for your family, for your kids kind of thing. And those two in particular getting along and speaking to each other. Like, it was just really nice. It was such a nice little B-thread that kind of continually developed that character in a really nice way that kind of fit alongside the season. So it just gave it enough. I really like that. The other thing I will say that was really interesting that I want to touch on is when there was that power outage and the chip that allows Felicity to walk stopped working.
Yeah.
As a reminder that technically there is one thing between her and permanent disability, and it's a power outage. So it's not perfect, the solution. So that was really interesting. It's not guaranteed that that could work for forever.
Yeah, I still hope that they're gonna, like, every now and then have a reminder that that could. Because it was Prometheus sent an EMP into the Arrow Cave and everything electronic stopped working, including her chip. So there are a lot of ways they could play with that. You know, like, maybe someone hacks into it or something. Like, I think that could be interesting. And then it would slightly redeem the horribleness that was that story in the first place.
Yeah, it was so, like, that whole storyline was so ableist in a way that, like, infuriated me. It still is to an extent, but the touching on it to be like, hey, remember this? Well, this is maybe not as perfect a solution as Felicity would like to believe it is. It is a vulnerable solution that could at any point take her ability to walk away again. And I would be mildly concerned over the idea that she's basically got back into the routine of being like, this is now normal. She didn't really have to be without her ability to walk for very long. I wonder how, if it came to be that the chip stops working again, how much more difficult it would be mentally to reconcile with that after thinking that there was an easy way out.
What if Helix hacked into her chip?
Ooh,
that could be interesting, because who's the biggest group of hackers that we know?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think they're gone.
No,
not, definitely
either.
Not for good. So,
and maybe like make her do things for them with the threat of them like disabling her chip or something.
And that is actually really interesting, because there's been talk recently about like chips that can be, or there is like an idea of like chips with AI technology that will be able to like monitor things, and it's like for health reasons and stuff like that. They're developing the tech to be able to do stuff like that. But as I was saying to someone, like, but any kind of high-tech stuff that's, like, kind of connected to any kind of neural pathways or able to, like, monitor, manage, or control, like, impulses or movement or anything like that. Because it's really interesting medical research just in general. But I was saying to someone, you know, it's just as, like, I've read and watched enough dystopia to know that if it can do something to assist you, it can also potentially be used against you, particularly when it comes to technology. So that is actually fairly timely with some really cool technology that's being researched right now. So that would actually be quite interesting to see them play that idea out, if they did go in that direction. Obviously, that's pure spitballing speculation right here.
Well, we all really liked Arrow Season 5, so positivity! And another show we really liked this season was Legends of Tomorrow, which basically took out everything that didn't work and doubled down on everything that did work. And was, I'm just going to use my word, it was delightful. So when we came back from mid-season, we jumped right into the return of Rip. And he was evil for several episodes because the Legion of Doom, like, brainwashed him, basically. And so we had evil Rip. And that was a really fun arc. What did you guys think about that?
I love seeing him play bad guy. There was something really satisfying about Arthur Darvill just being able to, like, really lean into that. Actually, I really am quite, like, as much as I feel very conflicted about Rip in general as a leader and as a character, like, as he was, like, through season one, I'm still not entirely on board with him in that role. But there was something just really entertaining about seeing him leaning into being evil. I just really thoroughly enjoyed it. I would actually really like to see Arthur Darvill play more villainous roles, just because this was so entertaining to me. But even in respect to, like, bringing the character back in again, I thought it was a really successful way of doing it, because obviously the team has moved on without him. So it was not the way that I expected them to bring him back. I fully expected when he did come back full time that it was going to be, he was going to take over and we were going to go back to, like, we were going to regress, essentially. And I was very, very concerned about it. And I'm just really glad that this kind of led into that not being the case.
How about you, Mai? How'd you feel about Rip?
I've never really felt that he was completely good. So him being
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, not good in the sense of, like, entirely morally good. He did some really dubiously questionable stuff and very selfish things. But I will say that probably his motivation was good. Like, what he was doing it for was good. It was just his means in which he was going about doing that were inherently selfish and mostly for his own gain, but not in a nefarious way that was, like...
He's always been a bit shady.
Not evil. Yeah, I think he's morally gray rather than pure evil, whereas playing into this was, like, more, like, full-on evil.
Yeah, I was not a fan of Rip in season one. Like, I thought he was selfish and kind of incompetent at his job, and they were trying to sell us that he was, like, really, really good at it. And I'm like, literally all the evidence you've shown us is to the contrary. Mm-hmm. So I don't buy it. But so this, like, starting with him coming, like, him just not being in the first half and then coming back with the evil plot, like, just added layers to his character and made him more interesting. And Arthur Darvill was clearly having fun, like, playing evil Rip, like, murdering Sarah at one point. Like, that was crazy. But then when he comes back, like, when they fix him, basically, and he recognizes that Sarah has really become the captain and kind of acknowledges it and steps back and just says, all right, you're the boss, you know, you're the captain now. And he was really struggling to kind of figure out how he fit among the team because he was no longer the captain. Like, I thought that made him a lot more interesting because he was suddenly having these struggles about who he was and where he fit in the scheme of this team that without him had really kind of found itself, and these people had found their niches, basically. And I thought that added layers to him, and it kind of makes sense in where they're going in the next season with him starting this new version of the Time Cops, basically. Like, he lost his purpose and kind of has to go find it again. I was kind of expecting there to be more of headbutting between him and Sarah, but he pretty quickly is just like, no, you are clearly the leader that they chose and respected. So now what does that mean for me? So I just, what they did with him, I thought they made him more interesting than he was in the first season.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely felt more interested in him. Like, for the most part in season one, I was just like, can we stop focusing so much time on him? Because I was just, like, not interested, especially because a large part of Rip's sort of storyline in the first season was centered around, like, his wife, like, getting justice for his wife and kid. But then I was just kind of like, well, I'm not. It's this problem that a lot of shows have where they do something like that, where you don't know the character, you don't have the emotional investment in them, you have that kind of very personal vendetta and mission, and it doesn't come off that well because you just aren't emotionally invested in the character at all. You don't, it's not that you don't care because you've been led not to care. You don't care because they haven't given you a reason to. And all they've been doing is telling you, you should care about this. Hey, you should care about it. Oh, this is really emotional and you should care about it. But in reality, you don't. There's a couple of things that I feel like have played that game recently of, like, telling, not showing, where they're literally dictating to you within, like, character arcs and even sometimes directly in the dialogue that you should be feeling a certain way, rather than using subtleties and just general good storytelling to lead you into feeling that way. And it's really lazy. So I feel like Rip's arc just in general was really great.
All right. So Rip comes back, but also we get to spend a lot more time with the Legion of Doom, and they're just the best. Like, they even got a whole Legion-centric episode. Like, I can't remember the last time I've seen, like, a villain-centric episode in one of these shows. And it was one of my favorites of the entire season, because the dynamic among the three of them was just so ridiculous and so fun. I was willing to overlook a lot of plot thinness in certain episodes, too, because it was just so freaking fun and enjoyable. But we find out their plot is to, they want the Spear of Destiny to change history, essentially, because Abarth Thawne wants to avoid being written out of existence, you know,
obviously,
as you would if you were yeah. written out of existence. And then Damian Dark wants to avoid being killed by the Green Arrow. And Malcolm just has a shit life, so I assume he just wants his life to be better. So we go through the whole thing, and then they actually get the freaking Spear of Destiny, guys.
Yeah.
And we actually get the alternative universe that they dub Doom World, because they're such dorks, and it's great. So did you think they would actually get it and go where they did?
No, I absolutely didn't think that was going to happen.
Of course not.
It was, for lack of a better word, delightful.
That's just the best word for this show. This yeah. So funny. Like, I did not expect it either. Oh, and they introduced Tolkien. Like, and George Lucas.
This show just has so much fun with itself. I think it really leaned into this idea where it's not being not completely serious. Like, there's still, like, good storytelling and good story arcs in this season, and it still has a lot of really great stuff to say, but it fully knows that it's a ridiculous time-traveling romp, and they just lean into that so much this season and have fun with it. They're like, we can play with whatever we want in time, and we're just going to do it, because why the hell not? And I know that Doctor Who does a lot of stuff that's very, very similar, where they introduce, like, figures of, like, public interest and history, and they just, like, kind of put their own sci-fi spin on things and make it really, really fun. But I just love that Legends is doing something similar with it, where they're balancing out, like, the really in-depth kind of interesting social political commentary stuff with just having ridiculous fun. And it just, the whole season start to finish was one of those shows that I was constantly looking forward to watching because I knew I was going to have fun.
Yeah, and especially they got rid of the stuff from last season that nobody had any fun with, like the Hawks and really terrible villain Vandal Savage. And they were like, here, let's have maximum fun. Turn it up to 11. Like,
and they
so
managed
ridiculous.
To make you like Malcolm Merlyn.
Oh my God. Like, I did not hate Malcolm in the way they used him. Like, one of my favorite sequences with him is when he and Dark are chasing the team. I think it was out of a hospital. I think it's right when they've rescued Rip the first time. And, like, they're on the elevator with their weapons and you've got, like, the Muzak playing and they're just, like, you know, holding their weapons and, like, just slowly going up the elevator. Like, it's so ridiculous. Ugh. I loved it. And I really just, I don't know, Malcolm was not annoying to me. Like, he had a purpose the way they used him. But that's what I found so annoying with him on Arrow is he didn't have a purpose. He just showed up randomly out of the shadows to be obnoxious and then would disappear again. He actually, like, had purpose in Legends. And I found him super hilarious. And the way he and Dark just, like, butted heads the whole time like children was just hilarious. So they really did a good job with him, I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely agreed. Like, 100% agreed. I just can't believe it took this long.
And now he's dead.
It took them this long, and now he's dead. Like,
yeah, that never stops anybody on these shows.
That's true. But yeah, so let's talk about Doomworld, because everything in Doomworld is amazing.
Can they make a theme park just called Doomworld?
I love how Sarah's like, we're not calling it that, and then everyone calls it that.
Yeah.
But you've got basically the Legion. Well, first they bring back Leonard Snart, but they bring back a version really before he started his heroic arc. So he's really kind of not understanding how Mick could be where he is, but his presence more or less convinces Mick to, like, betray the team. But I really did not like the way that they were kind of writing the team to kind of ostracize Mick. It was more plot-wise to push him to the Legion so they could do the Doomworld story, but it did feel a little out of character for them to be, like, as suspicious of Mick as they were, I thought, right before he betrays them. So I didn't love that, but I liked where it ended up going with creating the Doomworld. And so Mick joins the Legion temporarily and they change everything. And you've got Sarah and Amaya, like, working for the bad guys. And Ray is a janitor. And, like, what else? We had, what were some of the other jobs that they were doing?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember. It's been so long since it went off the air now.
Well, whatever. Oh yeah, Nate was a conspiracy theorist.
Oh my God, yes he was. It's but right, just for a second, that kind of vaguely makes so much sense. Like, I fully believe that, like, in another universe he would be. In fact, I'm not entirely sure that in our current universe he's not. Like,
oh yeah, and Jax was like a supervisor working under Ea Barthon, and he was like torturing Stein doing his science work. they just made them all completely miserable, basically. And Mick was the only one left of the team that had memories. And when Nate shows up, like, with his conspiracy theories, it pushes Mick, and he makes his choice to, like, go rescue the team. And hilariously, when they're getting everyone's memories back, the second they get their memories back, they all clock Mick in the face. Like, deserved, because it was his fault, but also hilarious because Mick was getting sick of getting punched in the face. Let's just talk Mick. He was my MVP this year. Like, y'all know Sarah's my favorite, but they have done such an incredible job with him. Like, when he started, he was just like this caricature of a villain. He had no real personality other than he liked fire and he was Leonard Snart's sidekick. So I wasn't sure what they were going to do with him. But then once they started the whole thing where he became Kronos, they started adding depth. And after Snart died and he had to be his own person, he has had the most incredible arc of really any character on the show. Like, I think his arc, just set on Legends, has probably been the best one, because Leonard's included Flash and Legends. Just on Legends, I think Mick has had the best arc that they've done. And he's gone from just a caricature to this guy with a lot of surprising depth. And he doesn't want you to know that he has depth, but he really does. And I'm constantly amazed at his character. And he was probably my favorite person to watch all season.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, it's going to sound terrible, but bear with me. I think the best thing to happen to Mick was Leonard's death. Like, and it sounds bad because it basically got him to step out from Leonard's shadow, essentially. Don't get me wrong, I absolutely love Leonard, like, so much. He was, like, by far one of my favorite characters of the first season. And, like, his sacrifice play, like, I'm still messed up about it. I'm still really emotional about it. I still miss him on the show all the time. But his death really did allow Mick, surprisingly, to become, if not on par with being, like, as good as Leonard, or as good as I felt about Leonard in the first season, if not, like, slightly more. Like, I really, really like him a lot. And if, when we first met Mick, way, way, way back when, you told me I would feel this way about him as a character, I would have probably laughed. Like, not gonna lie, I probably would have gone, are you serious? Like, no. But I actually do. I really, really, really like him. And I feel like that had Leonard survived season one into season two, we never would have got this character growth. We would never have got to see him do everything that he did. He would still be part of a pair without ever really asserting himself in a way that made him an individual. Whereas I feel like Leonard, while he worked very well in the pair, also managed to assert himself as an individual. Whereas I feel like with Mick, he never really got the chance, or was just constantly overshadowed by Leonard. And so as much as the death hurt me, I still feel like in terms of Mick's character progression, it's the best thing that could have happened for that arc.
I think we definitely would have gotten development from him if Leonard hadn't died, because the whole Kronos thing happened prior to Leonard dying, and that clearly affected him. And we got references to it this season, but I think you're right in saying we wouldn't have gotten the level of development.
No.
We got with him having to be a solo character. I agree. So I think we could have gotten some, but what we ended up with without Leonard is just unreal for where that character started.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to go to Aruba, guys.
Let him go on vacation.
And also, Nate's mom makes really good sandwiches. Oh, that was one of my favorite running jokes through the Doom world, was the sandwiches and how it was Nate's mom's sandwiches. Oh, so funny. Everything is great. Mai, tell us your thoughts about Mick.
I like him more. All I can give you. I didn't used to like him at all, and he's grown on me.
Well, it's like this kind of, like, it's a house season one of, like, so Marimer and I, like, way back when Legends of Tomorrow got announced, first of all, used to jokingly call the show Captain Cold and Friends. And it hilariously eventually turned out to be pretty much that in season one, which was kind of hysterical. But yeah, I feel like season two for me is like...
They finally made him a person.
Yeah, but it was like, it's Mick. It was very much a large part Mick's story, season two. And for as much as I complain about shows and seasons being heavily centered around white male characters, I feel like there's an ensemble cast that's strong enough individually working around him that when the focus did shift very, very heavily to Mick, it wasn't to the show's detriment because it's still very strong in every other way. So, yeah.
I think Sarah is very much at the front of the narrative too. Mm. So it's never like with the ensemble, that's very true. But I feel like they were giving the most focus to Mick and Sarah, it felt like, at least to me. And that's not, I don't think that's just my Sarah bias. Like, it really did feel like they were pushing her forward alongside him, I thought.
Yeah.
At least I hope that's not just my Sarah bias.
No, I don't think
we all know that I have.
No, you do, but I don't think that that's the case.
Because the season was also very much about her moving past her insecurity and taking on this leadership role that the team, like, puts on her, basically. So she has to come to terms with, you know, who she was, how she came back to be a confident leader. And she really does succeed in that arc, too.
Yeah, agreed. It was, I think everyone got a really good arc. They had a lot of time dedicated to them in a way that not one character really overshadowed the other. It just, yeah, it was really, really nice. And obviously they continued to develop Sarah. I feel like her move to Legends of Tomorrow was one of the best moves that they could have made, I think, for her. I love the development that she's had. I just so much.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Obviously, because I love everything to do with Sarah. That's my girl. But yeah, so everything is delightful on Legends. I was really shocked too with the Doomworld stuff because they actually technically killed off the entire cast because the Doomworld version of the cast ends up dying partly in battle, and then those who survived end up fading out of existence when they prevent the Legion from getting the spear, which was kind of surprisingly dark.
For as light as the show is, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what I was talking about a little bit in the previous episode, like with the Flash going as dark as it did. Like, you can have dark elements to a show that is also really light and really optimistic and hopeful and has a lot of fun with itself, but you can also still have that darkness in it and have those serious kind of storylines that kind of take a turn if you write smart. You don't have to be all doom and gloom all the time. So this is where, for me, Legends is starting to take the tone that the Flash kind of had at its core and balancing it a lot better than this past season of The Flash did.
Yeah, because, like, the world story is actually, when you think about it, super dark, but they balance it really well, which is what The Flash did well in season one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of started, they decided that Grant Gustin cries so prettily, but he needs to be crying all the time. So I just hope that they keep this momentum going into season three. Like, now they have to fix time because there are dinosaurs now. I really hope that they keep the momentum going because this season was just, I mean, in places it was narratively thin or there were holes, but I just didn't even care because it was so damn fun. And these characters are just so enjoyable to watch play off each other. And they're adding another girl next season. We're not losing Amaya, but we're getting a girl, and she is a Muslim.
Yeah.
And I am just like, we're gonna have three girls on the team, guys. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those. Yeah, it's one of those. Is that something we can do? Is that okay?
We can have more than two? What? I'm so stoked. I'm very excited. So I'm very hopeful for the next season, because this season was so much fun and it seemed like they really figured out what worked for this show.
Yeah.
And it was just so, it was like my favorite show to watch every week. I looked forward to it. Like, I really enjoyed Arrow, but I had so much fun watching Legends that it was the one that I looked forward to the most every week.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you had told me that after season one, I would have been like, yeah, right.
I just think it's so funny that the show that has the Legion of Doom is the one that's most fun.
I know. Go figure. But they made them both, like, serious but also funny in a way. I can't get over how well they did the Legion of Doom episode, where it was just, like, villain-centric.
Yeah.
And it worked. Like,
they pulled it off, which, who'd have thought we would be here basically just waxing poetic about how great Legends of Tomorrow was. Like, if I had to rank the Arrowverse shows, I think I'd go like in almost in reverse order to how we covered them. So Legends would be my top, followed by Arrow, followed maybe by Supergirl and The Flash. So
yeah, go figure. It's not what you would have expected going into the season.
No, absolutely not. If I was going to have made a prediction going into, at the start of the seasons, if I was going to rank them preemptively for how I thought I was going to enjoy them, I probably would have gotten Supergirl, The Flash, Legends, then Arrow.
Yep.
But it's completely not the case at all.
So we will see what happens with the next season. But right now, I'm very excited for the new seasons of Legends and Arrow, because they were both just so much freaking fun this year.
Yeah.
And they were fun in very different ways, because Arrow was pretty serious through the whole thing, but it was so damn good. And then Legends was just so freaking fun.
Dinosaurs.
So, dinosaurs! There were dinosaurs, guys! Like,
I know.
Tolkien and like Ray and Nate helped inspire George Lucas to write Star Wars, and I just...
And King Arthur.
I love this show. Yeah, King Arthur and Sarah Lancelot. I love this show.
Agreed.
Oh, it's so
seal much. Hero hype, seal of approval.
Yeah. So please don't screw it up next season.
Yeah.
If nothing else, we always had season two.
Yeah. Again, with a successful season two. Like, who'd have thought?
Where a Supergirl hit its sophomore slump. Legends.
Oh.
It up.
Supergirl hit its sophomore slump, and it hit it hard.
I'm like...
But we're on the positivity train.
Arrow and The Flash, season three. Yikes.
Yeah. So Legends, don't hit your season three slump, please.
Yeah.
Well, any final thoughts on Arrow or Legends before we wrap up for the episode?
No, I think I'm good.
I'm just going to shout out King Arthur, who was played by a Norwegian guy, because that was so exciting to find out.
I love when Mai gets excited when anyone Norwegian ends up involved in something that she loves. It's so great when you get, like, you'll get this little barrage of like messages. It's like, yeah, it's basically, yeah, it's like Norway pride. And to bring this to hockey for like 2 seconds, the team that we support drafted a Norwegian this year, and she got really excited about it. So
Danya,
it's always
how many
great.
Swedes got drafted this year?
We're not on that.
I'm just
we're
asking.
Not on that.
I'm just
we're
asking.
Talking about Norwegians, all of them.
Yeah, but like 20 but plus it... Swedes in 1 year. How many Norwegians ever? 20.
Yeah, so whenever Norway gets in somewhere, Mai gets very excited.
It is exciting.
Okay, so I guess that's it. Another episode down, and we've got a few more coming your way very, very soon. So stay tuned, guys. And yeah, as always, if you want to chat to us, get involved in the conversation, you can do so by hitting us up on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, or you can drop us an email at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But until the next episode, I'm Damia.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Mai.
See you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.